China, because between China and India. And there's also a notion that the Chinese people believe that their China includes Tibet. So the people in the interior see Tibet as an integral part. And then if China was to, say, grant autonomy to Tibet, or say, hold a referendum and the Tibetans vote that they would like to be their own country, this would have an impact on a lot of other parts of China where they have similar difficulties. Like they control Inner Mongolia. It's an autonomous region in China. And a lot of Mongolians would like to reunite with the independent country of Outer Mongolia. The people in their people in the autonomous region of Xinjiang, the Uyghur autonomous region of Xinjiang, who would like to form a greater Turkestan. There's the Taiwan question, of course, where people in Taiwan might like to form a Republic of Taiwan. So if China shows any kind of flexibility in any one of these, it could then lead to the other ones having their position strengthened, and, you know, one thing leads to another, and it's sort of like the Sorcerer's Apprentice, I think, if you're someone working out of the Central Committee in Beijing. So they're very firm on China's territorial integrity and really won't broach any compromise on that.
You know, in a way, looked at it that way, there'd be some sympathy here in Canada for the situation of the Beijing bureaucrats. I mean, I remember when René Lévesque or Lucien Bouchard or any of the Bloc Québécois or the Parti Québécois Quebec leaders would go to Europe and be treated in any way as a leader of a sovereign state. Our Canadian bureaucrats would get all in a lather about it.
It's funny you bring that up, because when I've talked to the Chinese about Quebec separatism, you know, they're puzzled why we just don't simply arrest all those separatists and send in the tanks. And so, you know, there's definitely a strong difference of approach between Canada and Quebec and China and independence movements in their own country.
Yeah, you'd have to tell them, our military, we're not sure we have the tanks. Can I ask you this? Why, then, are the world leaders? Because the Dalai Lama has been very busy recently. He's met with Tony Blair, with Bush. What's the upside, then, for him and his quest, I assume, still, for an independent Tibet?
Well, I think that the Dalai Lama meeting with a world leader strengthens his prestige as an important political leader, even though Blair and our Prime Minister have said that they're meeting him in his capacity as a spiritual leader and will discuss spiritual matters. Well, we won't know what they'll really discuss, but that seems a bit of a sleight of hand to try and make the Chinese feel happy. The Americans, President Bush, didn't say anything about the capacity under which he was meeting the Dalai Lama. But I think that it does provide some prestige for his cause, which is more autonomy for Tibetans, for the Tibetan Autonomous Region. The Dalai Lama is not calling for independence. He wants that Tibetans should manage their own affairs, but he's prepared to allow China to continue to look after defense and foreign policy. And so I think that from his point of view, it strengthens his negotiating position with the Chinese. And I think from our point of view, there's a great deal of support for the Dalai Lama and the Tibetan people inside Canada. And so Canadians want our Prime Minister to be meeting with the Dalai Lama. So I think it's more of a symbolic kind of meeting than a substantive one.
So that has been a change, then, on the part of the Dalai Lama, that he's now perfectly willing to let China look after, as you said, defense and foreign affairs?
Yes, I think that practically speaking, the idea that Tibet could become a completely independent country within the short term is pretty remote. And so practically speaking, he's asked for this. The Chinese don't buy it. They suggest that he's simply trying to make a transition towards independence, and so they only want the Dalai Lama to return to Tibet on Chinese terms dictated from Beijing.
You know, there have been some unlikely independence stories over the recent years, and I'm thinking of East Timor here and the former Russian states who are out from under the umbrella of the USSR. What would have to change for the Tibetan people to gain even more autonomy and maybe out-and-out independence?
Well, I think that to make that an effective movement, you'd really need to see the emergence of a Tibetan middle class, you know, educated people with some degree of wealth and education who have an awareness of themselves as citizens and demand their rights, which would be the right to self-determination. But at present, you don't see the emergence of a Tibetan middle class. Any middle class that there may be in Tibet, you know, people who run factories or people that own shopping centers and all these modern new things that you're seeing in Lhasa and the other major cities in Tibet tend to be ethnic Chinese. The Tibetans are still the underclass, and their economic activity tends to be small trading and herding and that sort of thing. So it, you know, we're talking in a high level of hypotheticals here about the future of Tibet as a distinct political entity.
It was a pleasure to talk to you, Professor Burton. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Charles Burton is a professor in political science at Brock University.
It is 6 minutes before 6 o'clock, legislating peace in Calgary neighborhoods. That's what an aldermanic committee is trying to do with a number of new bylaws. Those bylaws focus on the more common complaints City Hall receives every day. Tom Spears, CBC.